The ACA has cut the uninsured rate in Illinois in half, from about 12% to somewhere in the neighborhood of 6%. And more than 1 million Illinoisans have gained healthcare coverage as a result of the ACA and the state's decision back in 2013 to expand Medicaid. So we know that the ACA did make healthcare more affordable for many lower income Americans. And the way they did that, the way the law did that, was through what is known as subsidies, right? Premium tax credits. That's what makes healthcare insurance, you know, more affordable for those making less than about 400% of the federal poverty level. So these ACA tax credits were enhanced during the pandemic under the Biden administration, and the enhanced tax credits increased the amount of financial assistance for the current ACA population, but they also made middle-income Americans eligible for these premium tax credits, and those are folks with incomes above 400% of the poverty level. So enrollment in the ACA marketplace, we've seen that double to 24 million people since the introduction of these premium tax credits, and those are set to expire at the end of this calendar year without congressional action. And Robin, it looks unlikely that the Congress will take action. And then the last point I want to make on this is the double whammy that we're seeing for individuals in the ACA marketplace, which is the enhanced premium tax credits expiring. At the same time, we're seeing the largest increase in health insurance premiums since 2018.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of eastern Iowa and northwestern Illinois. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today we're going to focus on a very important topic that I'm planning to spend more time on in the coming year, and that's the role of healthcare in our communities and as a major source of employment. Everybody out there is aware of the major advances in medicine and healthcare over the past 50 years. We're living, for the most part, longer lives. And healthcare, as I've discovered in some of my research, has supplanted manufacturing as a major job source in many, many counties out in this region. So it's not only important for healthy communities, but it's a major source of employment. And this becomes a critical issue, as we saw here recently in the last couple of months when Medicaid funding was threatened. And there was a lot of concern about what this would do, not only to healthcare, but for jobs and employment in these areas. So it's a very important topic. And I'm very honored to have as my guest today to talk about this with is A.J. Wilhelmy, who's the president and CEO of the Illinois Health and Hospital Association. He's been in this position, well, it'll be 10 years coming up in January. And prior to that, he was a state senator representing the Joliet, Will County area. A.J., thank you so much for taking the time today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Robin. Great to be on your show and look forward to this discussion.
Yeah. It's again, it's very timely, and I'm really looking forward to your thoughts and your from your position on this topic. But first of all, if you would maybe talk about the association and what its functions are and its membership and what you do on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, happy to do that. You know, IHA is the Illinois Health and Hospital Association. We've been in business for decades. In fact, last year, we celebrated our 100-year anniversary. So when you look at our long history, we've been dedicated really to advocating for Illinois' 210 hospitals. We have about 40 health systems as well that we serve as they continue to serve their patients and communities. And really a core function of IHA is our advocacy. We engage in policy and advocacy on behalf of our members at every level of government. Of course, the core function of IHA is in Springfield and our state advocacy. But Robin, we also host education and training programs in support of our members. We have a robust set of business resources to help our hospitals with key services like medical liability and workers' compensation coverage, HR products and services, a group purchasing collaborative, and data tools. So we really have a diverse array of services for our membership, with the core services being our policy and advocacy work, as I mentioned.
Now, I want to try to give some background here for our listeners is anybody who's spent time, well, for medications or going to hospital. It can be complicated sometimes, but right now, the major topic in elections across the country is affordability, and healthcare costs have been going up. What's the major driver of that, AJ, as far as among your members, hospitals in Illinois? What's driving the increase in costs that seem to be going up for most folks?
Yeah, it's an important topic, and certainly affordability is really front and center for our hospital members. And when we look at the impact of cost increases for prescription drugs, supplies, and labor, all that's been well documented. But you know, the costs associated with excessive regulatory and insurer requirements, those have received less coverage, and yet they're equally challenging. So in addition, you know, to navigating the complex web of federal and state regulatory requirements, our hospitals, you know, face increasingly burdensome policies from insurance companies. And at the top of the list, Robin, is you know, the need to secure prior authorization for a growing number of healthcare services. And these insurer practices really force hospitals to dedicate an army of staff to appeal and overturn inappropriate denials by insurance companies. And this alone can cost billions of dollars every year. We've looked at recent data that show administrative costs now account for more than 40% of total expenses our hospitals incur delivering care to patients. So IHA, this has been a top issue for us over the past few years. We've worked with the legislature here in Illinois to address what we think is, you know, abusive prior authorization practices by the Medicaid HMOs. And we believe that standardization and transparency across all of the state's Medicaid managed care plans would not only save, you know, millions of dollars in administrative expense, but would also allow the right care to be given to the patient at the right time and in the right place, all of which would save taxpayers, you know, millions of dollars in the Medicaid program and ultimately provide better care to patients.
Without getting into personal details, I just had something like that happen on prior authorization for a medicine that was prescribed. And it's just absolutely crazy in the end. I wound up getting it, but the insurance company was diagnosing the wrong thing. So I would be willing to bet a lot of our listeners are shaking their heads in agreement that they've had that experience as well. I want to go back a little bit. The Affordable Care Act, which was called Obamacare, was passed. And a lot of promises made that it was going to start controlling healthcare costs more and, you know, provide insurance to the uninsured and et cetera. The law was passed back when, you know, it kind of covers the time when you were in the legislature, but also now as CEO and president of the Illinois Health and Hospital Association. What's your take on that law? I mean, it's still controversial. It's still political. What's your take overall on some of the hope and promises of the law and whether that's become reality or not?
Yeah, one of the key promises, Robin, of the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, was to enhance and expand coverage to health care and really through, you know, Medicaid expansion and the insurance marketplace. So when we look at some of the data, the ACA has cut the uninsured rate in Illinois in half, from about 12% to somewhere in the neighborhood of 6%. And more than 1 million Illinoisans have gained healthcare coverage as a result of the ACA and the state's decision back in 2013 to expand Medicaid. So we know that the ACA did make healthcare more affordable for many lower income Americans. And the way they did that, the way the law did that was through what is known as subsidies, right? Premium tax credits. That's what makes healthcare insurance, more affordable for those making less than about 400% of the federal poverty level. So these ACA tax credits were enhanced during the pandemic under the Biden administration, and the enhanced tax credits increased the amount of financial assistance for the current ACA population, but they also made middle-income Americans eligible for these premium tax credits, and those are folks with incomes above 400% of the poverty level. So enrollment in the ACA marketplace, we've seen that double to 24 million people since the introduction of these premium tax credits. And those are set to expire at the end of this calendar year without congressional action. And Robin, it looks unlikely that the Congress will take action. And then the last point I want to make on this is the double whammy that we're seeing for individuals in the ACA marketplace, which is the enhanced premium tax credits expiring. At the same time, we're seeing the largest increase in health insurance premiums since 2018. So there's a lot we could discuss about the ACA, but IHA and the American Hospital Association supported this bill 15 years ago, really because of our commitment to ensuring and enhancing coverage.
That was one of the major focuses of the recent federal government shutdown. Was these enhanced subsidies passed during COVID that extended the population that was eligible? I want to share something with our listeners, and I know you're aware of this, but I saw an article, and again, I'll cite the source, the Wall Street Journal. It was a news article, so this is not a left-wing newspaper or anything, but it said about half of those who qualify for those subsidies are small business people. I think there's an image out there when you think of healthcare subsidies as just the poor or maybe the poor working class, but these subsidies were helping a lot of middle class and even business people access healthcare.
Yeah, it's a very important point. So you think about the business community, and back in the day, I served as the chair of the Joliet Region Chamber of Commerce. And, 85% of our members were small businesses, which is, folks like, me and you and our neighbors that open a subchapter, S Corp or an LLC. And so their ability to afford healthcare coverage, like other individuals around the state, is critically important to their businesses and to their families.
I want to focus a bit here on I guess how much, you talked about the Affordable Care Act was successfully expanded coverage on the cost containment. It sounds like if it was able to contain costs, it was due to subsidies, government subsidies that were keeping maybe premium increases not as high as they would have been otherwise. How much, for our listeners, how much does our healthcare system overall depend on government programs like Medicaid and Medicare?
Yeah, it's a significant, component of the healthcare delivery system. And when we look at the data, again, Robin, 4 in 10 Americans receive their health insurance coverage through these two programs. We have 68 million seniors and individuals with disabilities that get their coverage through Medicare, and then 80 million people through Medicaid. And in Illinois, that's about 3 million low-income residents who get their coverage through Medicaid. About a third of the 3 million here in Illinois are children. And in rural Illinois, 1 in 8 residents get their coverage through Medicaid. So both are significant programs. Medicaid, certainly, there's this perception about Medicaid, but it is a significant program across the state. And in terms of reimbursement, I think it's important for your listeners to know that, both Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement fall well short of covering the cost of care that hospitals provide to individuals who are covered under these two programs. And just to give you some context, Medicare covers on average about 90% of the cost of care, and then Medicaid covers about 80% of the cost of care. So the underfunding of these two programs is a real financial threat, to many hospitals throughout the state. And one of the few ways that states can address the chronic underfunding of Medicaid is through what we call provider assessments, which are taxes levied on hospitals as well as nursing homes and Medicaid insurance plans that draw down federal Medicaid matching funds. And then those funds are used to supplement low Medicaid provider rates. And without these, so-called self-imposed provider taxes, many hospitals would be forced to make very difficult decisions, including eliminating service lines and cutting jobs. And that's why the provider tax restrictions that were included in the One Big Beautiful Bill are so concerning to hospitals throughout the country and here in Illinois.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm very pleased and honored to have as my guest today AJ Wilhelmy, who's the president and CEO of the Illinois Health and Hospital Association. He's been there since January of 2016, so coming up on 10-year anniversary. Congratulations.
Thank you.
AJ's a former state senator from up in the Joliet area, and we've been talking just a little bit about the state of our healthcare system and some important aspects of it, Medicaid, Medicare funding, and the role that plays in funding services. We've been talking a little bit about the Affordable Care Act and how it's performed since its enactment, and the big issue on everybody's minds, which is affordability. I want to go into rural hospitals because I live out in a rural area about an hour south of the Quad Cities, and there's always concern. We have a hospital here, but there's always concern that services are being maybe cut back a little, and you've got to go to bigger cities for services. And I know a lot of rural hospitals have closed across the country in the last 10 to 20 years. How does your association approach these hospitals? I mean, is it one of your core missions to keep them going and find ways to keep them in communities like where I live?
Yeah, Robin, you know, our mission really is to be that trusted voice and resource for our hospitals as they care for their patients and communities. And that certainly includes our small and rural hospitals. And when we look at the data, we have about 85 hospitals that serve small and rural communities across the state. These are primarily located, you know, like you said, Western Illinois and Central Illinois, Southern Illinois, but they are scattered throughout the state. 55 of our small and rural hospitals are known as critical access hospitals, and that's a federal designation, you know, for hospitals up to 25 beds and that are located at least a 35-mile drive from another hospital. And, you know, the primary objective of this designation, critical access hospital, is to reduce the financial vulnerability of rural hospitals and improve access to healthcare by keeping essential services in rural communities. And that's certainly a core function of IHA as well. And so when we think about the remainder of our small rural hospitals, there's about 30 hospitals we know as tweeners that are located in rural communities and have anywhere from 26 to 100 plus beds. And these hospitals are really essential to assuring access to care in our small communities across the state. And as you said, you know, there are significant challenges that they're facing. Reimbursement levels are inadequate. The cost associated with providing care, we talked about prescription drugs and supplies and workforce costs, but also these payer practices and the enhanced denials that they're experiencing, whether it's from a Medicare Advantage plan or an MCO under the Medicaid program. All of those conditions and circumstances are creating significant challenges for our small and rural hospitals. And we're doing everything we can to make sure that they can continue to serve their communities.
Is there, I mean, one thing I notice, and I know a lot of other people I talk to notice, is it, especially in rural areas, is it seems like it's harder to get in to see a doctor. It's taking longer to get appointments. And although you can get in to see a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant, is there a doctor shortage, like especially for rural hospitals, or is this part of a planned way of providing access? You might not get to see a doctor, but you get to see, a nurse practitioner, physician assistant, which is not at a doctor level, perhaps, but fairly close, a kind of a middle range option.
Yeah, we definitely have a workforce shortage in this state. It's a significant challenge, you know, as we look to the future of healthcare delivery. And let me just share a few data points with you today. And Illinois is currently facing a shortage of 15,000 registered nurses, and we're projecting that by 2030, the state will be facing a physician shortage of over 6,000, with 20% of those being primary care physicians. And a couple other data points. One half of the current nursing workforce is over the age of 55, and one third of our physicians are at retirement age right now. So as supply dwindles, you know, patients wait longer, as you said, Robin, And existing providers who are doing really important work are experiencing burnout, you know, at an alarming rate. So in our view, this is a healthcare and economic crisis that needs the full attention of our state and federal policymakers. And really, in my opinion, hospitals are too often taken for granted for the 24/7 care they provide, as well as that economic benefit that they make to the communities they serve. So we've seen hospitals in rural Illinois close in recent years. You mentioned that. And we've also seen hospitals that have been forced to shut down important service lines to maintain their financial viability. So making policymakers aware of these challenges is really a critical role for IHA and our membership. And we need to educate elected officials on these challenges and really urge them to support hospitals with providing adequate reimbursement, you know, holding payers accountable, as I said, and then removing regulatory barriers so that hospitals can continue to provide life-saving care. And we also need to really look at 2026 as a critical year to address workforce challenges, because we have a new healthcare workforce task force that was codified earlier this year. That task force will be up and running in 2026. We're going to be instrumental in working with the governor's office and legislators to look at actionable solutions to grow the pipeline and to enhance recruitment and retention efforts of physicians, nurses, and clinicians across the continuum.
AJ, is the shortage just in rural areas? Are you seeing this in urban areas as well? Are we just not getting an adequate supply of healthcare professionals?
Yeah, we are seeing that across the state in okay. urban, suburban, and rural communities. I think one of the particular nuances we've heard from our small and rural hospital leaders is the challenge sometimes of recruiting physicians who might, you know, want to work in larger urban settings. But there are ways to help with enticing and really incentivizing physicians and other providers to come to rural communities. And so I think that's going to be a focus of our task force efforts next year. And we're looking to see really actionable solutions that will come out of that task force that we can bring to the legislature and the governor's office for action in 2027.
I would imagine immigration plays a big role in this because, people notice there's more doctors that come from other countries now and provide this role. I would imagine that's a top concern of yours is any type of immigration restrictions, which I think people, again, seem to, the perception is it's focused on maybe workers, blue-collar type workers, but it also has impacts on people with, you know, professional backgrounds in medicine, engineering, and such.
Yeah, there's no question. You know, the visa issue is a very important issue that we've been addressing with the American Hospital Association. We've continued to do that because, you know, we've been active in the legislature in making the case for experienced foreign trained doctors to more easily practice in the state of Illinois. And it's really a critical workforce component for a state with a very little population growth, as you know, Robin, here in the state of Illinois. So that's going to continue to be a key issue for us. And the other thing about physician recruitment and retention, you know, we produce a significant number of docs out of our outstanding medical schools here in the state of Illinois. We want to do everything we can to keep them here in Illinois. And one of the challenges and barriers is our state's incredibly challenging medical liability environment. And we're most definitely an outlier in terms of the severity of jury verdicts, known as, you know, nuclear verdicts, and the cost for medical liability coverage and claims. And that's an issue that we're going to be talking about in 2026 as well.
I want to shift the last discussion point here for our interview today is the role of technology. It's obvious technology is advanced. It's providing important life extension services and all. Do you see that the role of technology playing an even bigger role, where you have like video appointments for people maybe that can't access services? And what do you see any other technological advancements out there coming up in the near future that might enhance our healthcare?
Yeah, you know, we're talking a lot about artificial intelligence, AI, and healthcare, right? And we know that these tools hold tremendous potential in helping to transform care delivery and address some of the administrative burdens that we've talked about today that lead to increased costs. So some of the technologies that are already being deployed are ambient listening that, you know, really help with clinical documentation. We've got chatbots helping with scheduling and triage, algorithms that support clinician interpretation of images. And all of these tools have already made a significant positive impact on providers and patients across the country. And we know that we're just scratching the surface of potential use cases and new ways that these tools can support the patients and communities our hospitals serve. And so, you know, one of the key challenges in this space is that expansion of digital health products that you were referring to, Robin, in rural communities has really been hindered by a lack of access to enabling technologies like, you know, broadband and reliable Wi-Fi. So there's got to be a significant investment in our infrastructure, including broadband and Wi-Fi, to address what is known as, you know, the digital divide, where rural and other underserved areas have less access to digital services, including AI tools. And we know that from the pandemic, that the use of telehealth was instrumental in assuring access to care. And so we have all these learnings from the pandemic that we can bring into, you know, this the healthcare delivery system, not only in 2025 and 2026, but as we look ahead to the next 10 years. So it's an exciting time as we look at these tools and how they can be deployed to assure access and also to drive better outcomes.
That's a great point on the lessons learned during COVID, because I remember that a lot of appointments were done virtually. And so for our listeners, it's not a question of what AI will bring in the future. It's already doing it out there in the healthcare marketplace. And I keep reading where healthcare is one area where AI may really lead to some significant innovations. So that'll be exciting to watch for. And I've got about a minute here left. If you could just summarize maybe what your top three priorities are. I know you've already talked about them during this, but for our listeners, just what are your top three priorities going into 2026 as head of the Illinois Health and Hospital Association?
Yeah, we need to really focus on three key issues: preserving adequate reimbursement for our hospitals to support the incredibly important services they provide and the economic engines that they create. Number two, we've got to make sure that we address the workforce challenges, as we discussed today, Robin, growing the pipeline and really doing everything we can on the topic of recruitment and retention. And that includes addressing the scourge of violence that's taking place in our emergency departments and our hospitals and clinics. And then third, we've got to hold payers accountable. Payers are utilizing tools like prior authorization that are making it incredibly difficult for our hospitals to continue to provide the service lines that they provide in communities across the state. And we just need to hold payers accountable because at the end of the day, it is all about access. And these tactics that are used are barriers to access. And we talked about prior authorization as one of them. So those are the three key issues for IHA as we look ahead to 2026.
Well, this was really a great overview of our healthcare system. And I know we just scratched the surface on a lot of these topics within our available time. But I'm very grateful for you to taking the time, and maybe at some point have you come back. It will be a lot's going on, and there's some great opportunities out there, but also some challenges as you've described today. So I want to thank you again. My guest today has been AJ Wilhelmy, who's the president and CEO at Illinois of the Illinois Health and Hospital Association. And thank you so much for taking the time today. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, I did too, Robin. Thanks for having me on your show.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.